Welcome back, everyone, to another edition of Renegade Radio. I'm your host, Andy Lowe. We are brought to you today by Renegade Concepts and, of course, the good folks here at Business Radio X. As always, we are discussing breaking the rules of conventional thinking, getting outside of the norms that might be holding you back or limiting you in business. And today, we're going to jump into a couple topics that are really near and dear to my heart. We're going to talk about sales and we're going to talk about marketing, two key aspects that are really important in your business. And as experts today on the panel, we're going to be talking with Mike Scheer from Frontline Selling and Tony DeFaria from DeFaria Media. Guys, welcome to the show today.
Thank you.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Thanks so much for having you guys on today. And I want to jump right in and let's talk about sales and marketing. Tony, let me lead off with you. Tell me a little bit about DeFaria Marketing. Just give me a quick 10,000-foot overview so as we get into the discussion, we know who we're getting advice from here.
Well, thanks, Andy. I appreciate the opportunity to be on. Well, my company is called T. DeFaria Media. It's been around since 2007. I grew up in the newspaper business and did all sorts of journalistic efforts and then moved over to the marketing side. And then in 2007, I had an opportunity to go out on my own. And I felt that in the same way that I was able to illustrate stories for the newspaper for a mass consumption, every company has a story to tell. And so we try to illustrate what other companies do. And our latest tagline is that we do the marketing so that you don't have to. Every business owner is called on repeatedly with all sorts of marketing opportunities, and so we strive to help our clients to identify the best vehicles for their marketing. If they don't have a marketing plan, a strategic marketing plan, we try to get them one, and if they do have one, we try to evolve it so that they realize their goals a little bit sooner.
And from the sales side, Mike, tell us a little bit about your company and what type of expertise you're going to bring to the table today.
Sure, Andy. Nice to be here. My name is Mike Scheer. I'm the president, one of the founders here at Frontline Selling. And in any business-to-business sale, whether it's someone who's expressed an interest in you, like a white paper lead or a website hit or a trade show attendee, or someone you're interested in speaking to, like a targeted account, the game really begins with that first meaningful business conversation. And there's lots of marketing activities that Tony's going to share with us that happened before that. And there's lots of stuff that happens after that first conversation to close the sale. But it's really initiating that first meaningful business conversation is really the critical junction. And that's what we do. We help our clients get more first conversations so they can sell more, period. And we've been around since 2002. I personally am a recovering enterprise software technology sales guy. Spent 18 years in enterprise software, 9 years with a company called JD Edwards in the ERP space, and started Frontline in 2002. We've been working with some of the biggest and most respected firms in the world to since then, to help them get more first sales appointments.
Well, let me start with a fairly simple question, and just we'll see if this sparks any debate between you guys. But you know, what's the difference in a sales based organization and a marketing based organization, or is there a difference?
Well, I can give that a shot. Well, I think there is a difference. I think it's more of a cultural difference. And it really has to do with, where the leadership of the organization and the power personalities within an organization. When we look at companies and we work with lots of firms, and we can see that they're heavily a sales-based organization, that typically means they have a very, very strong, hard-charging sales leader, and that the entire culture around the company is around growing sales, building sales, closing deals, quarterly reviews, pipeline reviews, and all that kind of stuff. And that's really the focal point of everybody's day-to-day activity. More in a marketing-driven, it tends to be less about the deal, and I'll let Tony kind of pick this up, but in my view is it tends to be less about the deal, but more about the brand, the business issue, the messaging, and around the idea of what it is an organization is trying to accomplish.
Yeah, well, in all honesty, I mean, sales, I believe, is actually the most important part of the business strategy, because that's what's going to pay for all the bills. I believe, complements the sales process. And so it's a tool that the sales managers and sales executives can use to just facilitate, to get across the value proposition, what is good about this specific company, and how do we get that message out to market faster. The use of a strategic marketing plan, which a lot of companies don't have, is an extremely important, because that gives you sort of a roadmap and a game plan as to how your sales operation is going to go to market with their message. It focuses and it outlines and it paces the sales activity. And that usually, once you have that plan together and on the initial front end, it does net results, a little bit stronger results down the road.
What are some of the differences in strategies that some of our listeners might be contemplating here? Realizing that we've got some people listening that have a B2C focused business and some that have a B2B focused business, what would be some of the differences in marketing versus sales? You know, like maybe if I'm B2C, am I heavier on marketing? Or if I'm B2B, am I heavier on sales? I mean, what do you guys think about that?
Well, I would say that, B2C, business as consumer, I think you have to, first of all, understand what the target is, and you have to fashion the message and the value proposition of what your product is towards whoever is going to be consuming or you hope to be consuming it. B2B, I'm not going to say it's simpler, but it's a little bit more direct. That's a business audience. They're on a much tighter time frame, and so you'd be quite a little bit more specific and less creative with your message.
And I totally agree with that. And if I can add to it, would be that, typically in a B2C environment, you're selling things that are much more transactional in nature. So they're even if it's a big higher priced item like a refrigerator, it's still, you either decide you're going to get one or you're not, right? It really is all about the marketing and the positioning, and there's lots of influences that happen before you show up to the retail store or go buy something. In a B2B environment, especially in a lot of the world where we play, a lot of times you're bringing solutions to market that are new, that are different, that are innovative, that help people run their business better, faster, cheaper, more effectively. And a lot of times you're bringing solutions that people, A, don't know exist because they're new, and therefore B, didn't wake up in the morning saying, I need to buy one of these today. So you really need to be much more consultative. You really need to have more access, more time. So the marketing message is important just from a positioning standpoint, but that's where the salesmanship really plays a greater role.
Well, Mike, you talked about that one of the greatest challenges facing sales organizations today is identifying net new sales opportunities. So how do you help address that problem, and what are some of the common challenges that are causing this?
Well, that's a great question. It's also a great topic for Renegade Radio, because we have a very non-traditional look on these things, right? So identifying new opportunities and kind of dovetailing on what I just spoke about, which was, the traditional the conventional thinking in the B2B sales world is that, it's all about activity, and number of dials, number of phone calls, and that's important. But how well we do that and how effective we are at those activities is really much more important. And so we have a challenge in many cases where people don't know who you are. They don't wake up in the morning saying, I need to buy one of these today. But every sales cycle has to start with the first conversation. So how do you secure that first conversation? And the traditional thought is that, well, you have to have a really strong message, and that it has to be compelling, and you got to do a lot of research before you call these people. But the reality of the situation is, and I'm not saying those things aren't that important, but the reality of the situation, when you put it into practice, once you do all those things, you've actually run out of time to actually make phone calls. And so the whole idea is it's a very one-dimensional process where we're forcing our message, we're forcing our phone call, when we pick up the phone and cold call somebody or whatever it is, we're imposing on somebody's day, and it's a one-dimensional aspect of it. We look at it very differently and say, well, sure, people don't know who we are, And sure, they didn't wake up in the morning saying, I need to buy one of these today. But every single one of our clients sells something that addresses a need or solves a problem, whether that those folks consciously acknowledge it or not. And so how do we tap into that latent pain? And so our approach says, you know, let's think about differently, right? While they don't know who you are, how do we get them to choose us as one of the two or three people that they should want to talk to this month versus all the other people who are trying to push their products and services on there? And if you actually take an approach where you include the decision maker in the decision process to want to have a conversation, they have hundreds of people calling them. They really only have time to talk to a couple of two or three people in a meaningful way on a monthly basis. So how do you get them to choose you as one of those two or three people? And it's all about doing it is communicating that message, that value proposition, way more often than what most people think is necessary to actually get that penetration, and through lots of different ways, through voicemail, through email, through administrative assistant conversations, and not only with the desired target, but with other folks within the organization so they can help promote your message when you're not doing it.
Tony, how about from a marketing side? How do you assist that? I mean, okay, clearly we got a problem here. Sales needs some help. Marketing should be able to grease these wheels. How do you do it?
Well, I believe that marketing plays a pivotal role in complementing what the sales staff is challenged with. You know, we offer the tools, we offer ways to analyze the product and look for the value assets that make it stand out. When you're talking about B2C, you're looking to communicate a nicer experience. For example, Coca-Cola, who I always, you know, everybody knows, they're always out there in one way or the other. They're always marketing. Sometimes they raise the volume, sometimes they lower the volume, but they're always out there. And so marketing serves to kind of continue to keep that ambient noise of what this the company is trying to sell. The other thing that it does, in addition to informing the customer, the potential customer, is that it motivates the sales staff. When you give your sales staff tools, collateral materials, great looking websites, or sales materials that are clear and succinct, the salespeople understand that while they're investing on my ability to be able to sell this product. And so I've found that really energizes the sales staff quite effectively.
Well, we're talking about this net new sales opportunity, and there was something that you mentioned earlier in our conversation before the show that I thought was interesting. You're talking about ethnic marketing, kind of a different approach of going out to your customer and looking for a different niche. I mean, Mike said you got to find out a way to become one of those two or three conversations in a month out of hundreds of calls. You know, how does this play, and how can ethnic marketing really help a company reach some of these new opportunities?
Well, it is very clear that the United States, and not just Atlanta here, but the entire country is an entire melting pot. And, you know, we talk about the growth of the Hispanic community. We have a large Asian community coming up. We have, you know, a substantial African-American population. So you have a quilt of many colors, if you will. I believe that companies have a tremendous opportunity by reaching ethnic markets in a culturally effective way. That's not just taking your ads and translating them into a specific language. It's getting inside the heads of the potential consumers, which is not that difficult because we're all in this together, if you will. I mean, we're all consumers. We all need to buy things, and we're all interacting. And it's just a major opportunity that a lot of companies are not taking advantage of right now.
Why do you think they're not?
Well, I think particularly on the Hispanic community front, and I speak Spanish fluently. It's about 10% of my business interpreting that market for companies. I believe that all of this situation with the immigration reform has kind of turned people off. I also believe that with the recession, companies have had to just basically get down to basics and say they don't have the latitude and the flexibility that they once had to explore new markets. But I argue that you need to do that because so that you don't become stagnant, that you're always looking for new revenue streams. And ethnic markets are incredible revenue stream that is untapped. If you do this the right way, you will gain a very loyal following. And at the end of the day, we're all looking to broaden our businesses, and why not look at every opportunity possible that's out there? And the ethnic market is a fantastic one.
And actually, while Tony's comments were focused on B2C, and my world is B2B, the overarching concept and strategy, I think, is the same. What he's saying is communicate your message in a way where the audience can receive it the way they want to receive it. So, and it's not just in a language, it's in a, you know, in some sort of cultural bounds, as he talked about it.
Well, it's even in a demographic, right? I mean, like, if you're trying to go for the 25 and under crowd, you need a text message marketing strategy versus a print marketing strategy.
Absolutely. And sort of an aside, right? So I have a 16-year-old son, and he is a social marketer. Well, what does that mean? Well, he and his buddies have built large followings on Twitter, and they get paid to promote, you know, to promote certain products and advertise. Just like, you know, Andy, maybe when you were a kid, someone gave you a stack of, flyers to put on the windshields of cars in a supermarket for $20. Well, and you were just a foot soldier spreading a message. Well, now that happens digitally, and there are these, you know, high school kids who have built these constituencies, and really their message has to resonate. But they can't put any ad or any message out there. They're not going to put ads out there for dentures if their marketplace of all their followers are all 25 and under, right? They're going to put cool stuff like, you know, new movies coming out or Oakley sunglasses or something like that. So even at 16, my son knows that he's got to put messages out there that resonate with the marketplace. So he happens to have a comedy site, and I sometimes give him some jokes, and he's like, "Well, nobody would understand that." Right? sometimes they work. Sometimes I give him, you know, ones to put out there, and they work. And sometimes, but a lot of times he looks at me like I have three heads, because it's like, who would understand that, right? And that's his domain. But again, I really think it's all about, you know, tuning the message. And even a B2B world, you know, you can't have one size, you know, fits all messaging. You have to have, when you're going out, and if you're talking or want to get to the CFO, there's a certain tenor to the message that's got to be financial and cost savings oriented versus a head of operations versus a head of IT or even the CEO. And those messages have to be tailored. No different than messages need to be tailored for different ethnic markets.
Well, I would agree that the advent of technology, what that has allowed to do is a couple of things. One, you're able to micro zone, really specifically niche market to people with specific interests. And it also allows you to measure the results. So you know how many people are clicking on your website, you know how many people might be viewing your video, and then so on. You know, the advent of video is really important. People don't have time to read. I still believe in print advertising, but I believe in all of the above. I believe it's a good combination of several vehicles that can really get your message out there, and why not hit them in three or four different ways?
That makes a lot of sense. So let's hit this topic, because I think this one is one that that we really would like to delve into here, and that's this idea of, Tony, you said, we do the marketing so you don't have to, and Mike, I know with your business, you guys are coming in and doing some of this, quote, frontline selling for companies. And that's a big deal, because companies are trying to do everything themselves, especially as we get into the smaller businesses. They're trying to do it all on their own, because we learned that lesson in school, right? I mean, I tried the team approach to school. They called it cheating. I called it collaboration, you know, potato, potato, I don't know. But anyway, they told me I couldn't do it. I had to do it by myself. But in business, that really doesn't make sense. What are some of the advantages and disadvantages that you guys address to companies that are trying to do everything by themselves?
Well, you know, our business is actually, there's two sides to our business. We either fish for people, if you will, where we'll do that frontline prospecting for them, and we follow a regimen and a discipline in order to do that. But we also, that's half of our clients fall into that category. The other half fall into the category where we'll actually share our best practices with them and teach them how to do it for themselves. And you know, in truth, it's 40% do one, 40% do the other, and about 20% do both. But, you know, doing it yourself versus, you know, outsourcing or having, you know, typically what we look at is if someone hasn't already made the investment in building out their staff, then they're probably going to be better off leveraging our resources to do it, because it's literally just you know, put the plug into the outlet in the wall and it just works, right? And we just know how to do this, and it works, and we're very, very fast to market and don't have to worry about recruiting or hiring or onboarding or all those sorts of things. But if you already have an infrastructure in place and you're already paying a lot of money for it, you know, then we would tend to say, hey, the first place you should look is, why don't you see if you can improve the output of that infrastructure? And so it really depends on where we intersect with them. But again, if you were deciding from scratch on which to do, be it marketing, be it outsourcing, you know, this type of function, only in the core competencies would I recommend that you do yourself, which is part of your core business. But all these functions, I don't care if it's payroll, I don't care if it's, you know, if you can outsource your accounting, if you can outsource your HR management, if you can outsource, you know, a good part of your marketing, or, you know, just the kind of the grunt sales work. But once you get into your domain, that's where you should take hold of it.
Yeah, I would say it's always interesting to me that, you know, the first area that people cut back on is their marketing when times get tough. And I think it's just crazy to do that. And I can understand if you're not able to sustain your staff, but you should never stop marketing your business. My gosh, that's the only way that you can continue to kind of get the word out there. You know, what we try to do is, let's say companies that are smaller companies, say 5 to 10 people. Well, we're a resource, and usually it falls to the owner of the company to kind of juggle a lot of balls. And so they're getting called on repeatedly by folks trying to sell them something or trying to market something to them in a vehicle. And so what we try to do is just field all those phone calls. And once we're able to understand what the business objectives are, then we're able to very quickly orient the marketing dollars in what we feel will be the most effective way for that company. You know, for larger companies that have existing marketing departments, it always helps to have an outsider kind of take a look at things, how things are going. And we can serve as a sounding board. We may be one of the customer demographics that they're trying to reach. And so people kind of get very internalized, and they don't see the outside of the end. So we try to find those opportunities for folks as consultants.
Well, here's what you run into. I mean, and I'm sure you guys have heard this, you know, dozens, hundreds, thousands of times, who knows. But it's, you know, it's the money factor, right? You got the business owner out there, and they really struggle sometimes with figuring out how to invest in their business. You know, they kind of do it backwards. Like early on, they're hoarding cash and they don't want to spend anything, so they can't take advantage of some of these services. And later on, they end up, when they have money, they're kind of throwing it away on stuff they don't really need. I mean, how do you address that issue? How do you help a business owner see, hey, I know it looks like a struggle, you know, because money's tight right now, but the ROI is significant enough. You need to put money into your marketing. You need to put money into sales. You need to create this because it's going to put revenue back in your pocket. I mean, how do you get that message across?
Well, I remember in the beginning of this recession, right? I had one of my clients came and actually doubled their investment in us. And I, you know, and we're thankful for the business, right? But we had to ask, so why, you know, we got a lot of folks cutting back and you're doubling your investment. He said, nobody ever saved their way out of a recession. And so kind of what Tony was talking about was, you know, you got to be out there. You still need to sell something. And I did a talk to a group about selling in a tough economy. And I asked the group, you know, to pick, you know, just volunteer, pick an industry they were in. And they would pick an industry and say, well, how big is that industry? And, you know, whatever industry they picked, they said, well, it's a $10 billion industry. Okay. And how much has the industry expanded or contracted? Oh, it's terrible. How much has it contracted? Well, it's contracted 10%. Okay. So you're telling me that it's still a $9 billion industry. So now, you know, so it's not like it went to zero. It went from $10 billion to $9 billion. But $9 billion is still a really big number. So how do we fight and win our fair share or more than our fair share? And what most people don't realize is you don't have to outrun the bear, just all the other campers, right? So you have to really just be better than everybody else. And it typically means just working 5 or 10% smarter or 5% or 10% harder.
Well, to that point, there's that old saying that says, you know, when business is good, you market, and when business is bad, you market more. The textbooks say that you should earmark about 15% of your annual revenues towards marketing. That's a big number if you think about it. Take your annual reviews. More realistically, companies will do maybe 5 to 7%. Even then, people might think it's too expensive. But why would you not want to be out there with your message constantly? Why not explore these ethnic markets that if you can reach them, you will have a completely whole new type of customer that might be coming to you?
I got a great reason, and maybe you guys can address this one, and that's the fact that there's a lot of people out there in marketing, sales, and many other industries that they can't deliver. You know, they make promises, they can't keep them. They hey, it's going to be great. We're going to increase your performance, and it doesn't happen. And people have thrown countless dollars at advertising campaigns, marketing campaigns that didn't work, sales strategies or trainings. It's just the same old rhetoric. You know, how do you set yourself apart? And what are some of the things that consumers are, you know, and by consumers I mean businesses. What are some questions they should be asking to companies like yours to ensure that they are moving in the right direction and getting the help they need?
Well, it's kind of interesting because, you know, here I'm the sales guy, but I'm talking a little bit more about marketing now. But I do believe in marketing because you got to get your message out there. And from a sales perspective, you shouldn't be cutting back on that. You should be working, you know, harder, but more importantly, smarter about how you do your outreach. And the reason why this marketing discussion is real important to me is because we, from a sales perspective, from a business development perspective, and an outreach perspective, we take our approach is a decidedly marketing-based approach to a sales problem. How do we identify the right person? How do we gain access to that person? How do we engage in those first conversations? And the whole idea is getting the message out in a very consistent manner through multiple communication protocols. And that's really the essence of what a lot of marketing is beyond creating the message. But a lot of folks, a lot of those owners who come, you know, say, hey, you know, you didn't deliver, or you didn't do this, or you didn't do that. I think that the challenge the marketer or whatever on that, in some cases, it's not always the marketer's fault, right? It's maybe the owner having unrealistic expectations, or maybe the marketer not setting the right expectations. You know, 50% of marketing is all total waste of time and money. The problem is we don't know which 50% it is. So, but you have to believe that being out there is better than not. And what a lot of owners will say is that, hey, if I need to tie this to specific revenue, that this dollar I spent on this trade show or on this advertising banner brought in these 7 transactions. And it's just not that precise, right? You just can't do that. We see time and time again that a marketing effort that happened in 2010 was a contributor or a cornerstone to an opportunity or deal that came in 2 or 3 years later. And, you know, it's just really hard because you got to get that name, that awareness, that message out there. And at some point in time, either someone's either not ready, willing, and able to buy, or from a sales perspective, they weren't able to execute and convert it into a sale. So, you know, it's really not a one or the other, but you have to, are you doing the right things? Are you getting in front of the right people? Are you getting that message out there? Is that message compelling? Is it credible? And is it consistent? And those are the sorts of things you should be measuring. Sales has to do their job too, and convert what, you know, the opportunities that marketing presents to them.
Well, what I was going to just add is that the the sad reality is that most companies market piecemeal, and that's the most ineffective and most expensive way to do it. And what I said earlier on, and I don't want to get into marketing lingo or speak, but a strategic marketing plan is really important on the front end. What is your outlay? What kind of budget are you going to have? And the other thing is that how diversified is that marketing play going to be? A lot of folks will market piecemeal, and then they'll market on one thing. We'll just run some ads for a while, or we'll just run this Google AdWords thing, or we'll just do option C, where the real the formula that seems to work the best is a combination of all of the above, or about at least 3 different things. You should be out in the marketplace with about 3 different vehicles at one time, and that kind of begins to more effectively get the message out in ways that people can see. Billboards, for example, very old technology. My gosh, there's a ton of traffic here in the Atlanta area, so they turn out to be quite effective. So that's old school technology. It's not social media so much. Social media is very important, but why not have a billboard at the same time you're doing your Google AdWords plan?
I want to circle back to that social media in a second, because I think that's a hot topic that we want to talk about from a sales and marketing perspective. But before we do, you know, let's go kind of approach this. Do you guys work within the organization with the other arm? Because obviously they're important, they're intertwined. I mean, Mike, I'm thinking about what you're talking about over here, and it's an age-old struggle between sales and marketing. Sales has one perspective of what they think marketing does. Marketing has another perspective of what they think they do. When you guys are working inside of an organization, do you reach out to the other arm? You know, Tony, do you reach out to sales? Mike, do you reach out to marketing?
Well, in our case, we actually sit right in the middle between them, and from our business, when clients are outsourcing to us, typically the budget that comes from in a B2B organization typically is marketing. So we're almost always working for the marketing team. Now, what we're producing goes right to the sales team. So we're sitting right in the middle. When we're coming in and sharing our best practices, sometimes that group is like a lead development, lead qualification. Sometimes that reports up to sales. Sometimes it reports up to marketing. So we're constantly, working with both sides of the house. And I can confidently tell you that, you know, there's no fair-haired child here on either side. We see the fights going back and forth, and it's. And they're all fighting over the ball, right? Well, the ball is always called a lead. And so, you know, the marketers or the salespeople, you know, are always pointing to marketers and saying, you wouldn't know a good lead or qualified lead if you tripped over it, right? And the marketers are saying, wow, look at all the wonderful leads we're creating. You salespeople can't convert them. And so really they're both – probably they're both wrong, right? They're both, you know, are more wrong than right. And that's where we have to bring a level of collaboration. There's a in a B2B world, there is a codependent level of accountability from that transition. Is, you know, in my opinion, you know, where marketing provides the greatest value in a B2B organization is, number one, is giving the salespeople direction on where to, you know, fish where the fish are, right? Doing territory planning, account planning, target marketing, vertical marketing, whatever, that's number one. Number two is the story. The story's got to be compelling. The story's got to be complete. The story's got to be easy to tell. And that's what, you know, Mark can come up with, you know, with the story. And then do things to get the message out there on a consistent basis. So whether they're air campaigns, trade shows, whatever, anything to do to, you know, advertising, print advertising, whatever, to get the message out there. And then at that point, in my opinion, everything else should be about, you know, about sales. Sales should be able to find out, you know, to get that first conversation, to qualify that first conversation, and to move that first conversation into a sales opportunity, and then downstream to revenue.
Well, I was would say that, you know, marketing in my experience has been perceived in the past as the obstacle to sales. You know, we have a tendency to overanalyze and can slow a very aggressive sales team down, and that can be true. However, marketing, there's a science to marketing, and then there's the art. And so what marketing can provide is just good business intelligence that hopefully the salespeople can then execute. We're also the brand stewards, if you will. So again, not to stand in the way, but we can form a strategy that will allow sales to flex the brand in a way that makes sense for the company. Another option that people are not generally aware is the importance of internal marketing. Once the sales staff sees all of this marketing activity going on, you're able to create some vehicles to not only motivate the sales team, but motivate the rest of the staff. And now all of a sudden you have multiples of marketers at will, because they're understanding the message and they get more excited about what you're trying to do.
Well, that makes sense. Well, let's go back to the social media idea, because this is something that we're hearing a lot about. Everybody's wanting on the social media bus. I can't say that I believe everybody's getting it right. I think a lot of people are getting it wrong. A lot of people are putting countless time into this thing, because it can be quite an undertaking. From an aspect of marketing, and let's talk about an aspect of sales, how should companies be using social media?
Well, if I may, the social media is obscure, if you will. It's very difficult to find out exactly. Okay, so what is going to work and what's out there? You have a lot of companies that are marketing different aspects of social media. It's important because it is what is it's fashionable now. I mean, it's the latest technology. It gives you an opportunity to do niche marketing. But I think it kind of starts with your own website. You know, do you have an intelligent website that is searchable, that is relevant, that you re-content routinely to kind of keep it hopefully up and content seems to be king. I mean that is available. And then how can you is it coded properly and will the search engine be able to find it? Then I think that's your first step. Social media can also be quite tedious. If you can have a search engine optimized website, but if you don't update that website regularly, then it kind of begins to fall away. So I think when we're going to talk about social media, I think it is a longer term investment. It is something that you have to have. Identify hopefully a vendor that knows how to can show you some significant traffic increases and it can be seen. I mean there are analytics that are available that a customer should demand to see. You know, I need to know from my marketing team what my analytics are for my website. You know, is traffic up? If you don't know, find out.
When you talk to companies about the some of the various arms of social media, like the thing that pops in my mind is, okay, I hire a company who's going to increase my traffic, right? And I get thousands of people liking my Facebook page and following me or what have you, and it's great, my traffic is up. But what comes with that traffic is not just viewers, but rather how people use social media now, like I know I do. If I have a problem with the company or a bad experience or anything that I want immediate feedback from the company, I don't call an 800 number anymore. I go find their Twitter handle, I go find their Facebook page, and I stick it right out there because most large companies are going to come back to me, you know, because they're watching that stuff. So it's kind of a two-edged sword. So what's the strategy for a company who's approaching this as a marketing, messaging, outbound, let's get a following, but how do they prepare for the other side of that?
Well, I mean, as you say, Andy, the value is that the leadership of the company now has a tool that they can directly monitor, and they can find out what the people are thinking out there. And it is. I mean, it's a very effective way to kind of get a complaint out, a very effective way to get compliments out there. They can call that for testimonials, if you will. You know, they can use that to their so it is a wonderful tool, but I cannot get away from how tedious it can be. I mean, you're sitting there going through, and if you're a large company, you could have thousands or, you know, hundreds of thousands of people, you know, following you and taking a look at you and all of that, and how do you analyze all of that?
How about from a sales side, Mike? Especially, I'm thinking B2B, all right? B2C is one world. Like I had somebody tell me recently that one of the last things you should do as far as social media is put up a Facebook page if you're a B2B style business, that should be much further down on your strategy list. I don't know if that's right or wrong, but what do you think?
Well, I tend to agree that, you know, you should do it, but is it, you know, is it in the top 10 list? Probably not. So first of all, my whole take on social media is that it's really not new. It's really just word of mouth. The only thing it is now there are technology platforms to make them happen faster and in greater numbers. So whether it's Twitter or Facebook or YouTube or whatever the case may be, and they could spread, you know, in a viral fashion very, very quickly. So right now, Andy, when you had that problem with the company and you went on their Twitter handle and to try to get some feedback and get a reaction from the company, before Twitter, you did the same thing. You were at a cocktail party and you shared your bad experience with somebody else, but only one or two people heard it because that's all you can get to. But now you can get to 100 or 1,000 or whatever it is. So, you know, it's really the same thing. It's just all social media does is make this stuff happen much faster. So they do have to build things like, you know, companies have to build response teams and be monitoring this and everything. But they can also promote their messages faster through, you know, these different types of media outlets. And just like you would check a reference if somebody reached out to you, you know, people do that all the time. We're reaching out on behalf of clients and, you know, they're checking and calling their references and things like that before they call us back. And again, that's just how we operate as individuals. What I see is from a sales perspective is just understanding the power of that social media and what is most effective from purely a sales function. I get a lot of salespeople that we do training for, and they spend an inordinate amount of time – on places like LinkedIn and doing, you know, LinkedIn groups and discussions and all that kind of stuff. And in my opinion, it is woefully a colossal waste of their time, ineffective use of their time. That's a marketing function, is to be part of that and spreading the message and things like that. Salespeople need to be making this month's quota, next, you know, this quarter's quota, this year's quota, and bringing in revenue. By the time you post something on some social media site, to the time that that might turn into a sale, could be never, you know, and talk about not being able to track ROI, right? We know it's good to get the message out there, but that's not something your salespeople should be engaging in. Sure, they can use places like LinkedIn to go maybe look for people, or, you know, look for names of people, but that's not really where they salespeople should be spending their time. That's where, in my opinion, marketers can best direct salespeople and help them spread the message, help them, give them relevant stories to tell, listen to what's happening on social media and give the salespeople the relevant stories to tell. But the salespeople shouldn't be spending a whole lot of time trying to find opportunities there when they're out there.
Well, how about a real-world personal experience here? I mean, you mentioned a couple times getting that first conversation, qualifying that conversation. Salespeople should be focused in other places. They can go to LinkedIn and get a name. But, okay, they go to LinkedIn, they get a name, and they've got that. I mean, let's just use frontline selling for a minute. How do you guys go to market? I mean, you've got a great product. You've got a great service, obviously, something you provide, something that would be beneficial for a company to take advantage of. But how do you become one of those two or three people they talk to in a month?
Sure. And it's just a matter of – so and kind of not to be confused with the social media discussion is – so what we have – figured out, and again, none of this is rocket science, right? Every one of our clients, we actually have a 16-year-old, believe it or not, currently going through our program, and just started a week ago, and by tomorrow, Monday the latest, he will be on the phones calling CEOs of Fortune 500 companies. And confidently doing it. He's that close to it. We have a 16-year-old actually going through the program right now. But so anybody can do that. And not any 16-year-old can do it, but anybody who's been in college, first day out of college, 25-year veteran, they can all do it. They all have the intellect, the incentive, and the talent to do it. The only thing people lack is a simple common sense approach that tells them on any given day who to contact, what to say, how to say it, when to say it, but most importantly, to make it a ritual and do it the same way every time, just like you brush your teeth or tie your shoes every day, right? And so what we have figured out, again, not rocket science, is that each one of us has a unique communication DNA. There's an optimal way, Tony, for me to communicate with you. You might be an auditory learner, so voicemail is important. Andy, you might be... emails might be the most important, right? I might pay attention, more close attention to my LinkedIn where somebody else doesn't, right? So there's lots of different ways, multi-touch point approach. Not going to get an argument from anybody on that, okay? But we have figured out that while everybody has their unique patterns, there are common DNA patterns amongst large groups of people. Combine that with the fact that every organization has its own informal social way of communicating messages. So I may call your CEO, Andy, and you may want some new radio type of equipment or whatever, or more wattage or whatever it is, right? And I might talk about increasing the wattage or for less cost or whatever it is, and your CEO will say, well, hey, let me forward that on to Andy because he's the one who cares about that. So there's a way your organization communicates. So when you take the fact that you consume messages differently and then the organization promotes messages differently, what we do is we take a very systematic approach where we call at the same level of each company exactly every single time. And then we know there's a finite number of predictable things can happen. You can get the key player, the CEO, the admin, voicemail, whatever. And there's a right answer to every single one of those eventualities. And there's surprisingly very few. It's much more of a science than an art. So what we do is, rather than try to get these people to pick up the phone and waterboard them into a meeting or whatever, right, we actually include the key player in the decision-making process over a longer period of time. So we're putting messages out over a period of time a number of different ways. They have to be relevant. They have to be consistent. And I'm sure Tony's not going to give me an argument on that, right? So the tagline, like McDonald's, is always, I'm loving it, right? Has to be consistent, has to be through multiple media outlets, and it has to be within to multiple people within the organization. So when they repurpose the message, it stays intact as much as it is. But more importantly, when they repurpose the message, they're doing it while we're sleeping. So they're promoting our message. And that's because we're only going to get people to pick up the phone. Statistically, they only pick up the phone between 4 and 5% of the time. And so we help our clients become better at those, you know, 4 or 5% of the time. But where we really gain huge amounts of productivity is what happens to the other, making the most out of the other 95% of the time when, you know, and making sure you're doing it in a way where it survives the time you're actually spending doing it. Okay. So if you think about it, it's really a social aspect to it, because just like a Twitter message gets retweeted or a, you know, or, you know, you know, your message that we're putting out there from a prospecting standpoint is very consistent. It's getting repurposed within the organization that we're trying to prospect to. And ultimately, everyone in that organization will say, is this relevant to me? Yes, no. If not, who is it? Let me send it off to Andy.
Tony, how about you? I mean, again, great idea. People, you know, need marketing. They don't want to do it or they're not good at it. How do you get that 5 or 10 minutes with them to let them know what you do and get them to take advantage?
Well, we you know, we struggle like everybody else. You know, we do try to kind of our business model is it's very efficient. We can routinely save about 30% or more based on, you know, marketing buys and budgets, because we try to get organized on the front end. In terms of the social media, if I may go back to that for just a second, you know, I think it's just important for company leaders and owners just to be aware of all that's out there, and so hopefully the marketing staff, in conjunction with the sales staff, will be able to advise and say, you know, you do need to have a Facebook page. You do need to have a Twitter account. Use them in the way that they're intended to use. You know, the worst thing I see on LinkedIn is that people are telling me what they did over the weekend when it's really a business thing. You know, or politics get into the Facebook profile. But why not take advantage of a Facebook that has millions of users and it's free? So, you know, for, getting back to your question is, you know, every business owner is just overwhelmed with options these days. And so what we try to argue is that, you know, we can make sense of all of that and in an educated way, and hopefully be able to guide you, your company, not only externally but internally, on how to kind of realize your return on investment in a much faster and a much more efficient way, and not with that tremendous overhead of traditional advertising agencies.
So for our listeners out there that either want to learn some valuable sales skills so they can improve their own operations, or maybe they just want to hand this thing off altogether, Mike, how do they go about getting in touch with your company and finding out more information?
Oh, it's real simple. We're located in Alpharetta, Georgia, and you could reach us on the web, www.frontlineselling.com, all one word, or you can feel free to reach me directly, Mike Shearer. And you can call me directly at 770-777-9336.
Tony, from the marketing side, how do we get in touch with Tedeferia Media?
Well, Tedeferia Media can be found on the internet at www.tedeferiamedia.com. And then you can always feel free to drop me an email at tony@tedeferiamedia, or reach me on my phone. I'm always on 404-630-0639. I'd be quite happy to take your phone call.
Well, guys, this was a great show today and great information. I always love talking sales and marketing. Any parting, we'll call them renegade thoughts, before we sign off today? Anything you think our listeners should know?
Well, if there's salespeople out there, the one parting thought is that remember, when you're trying to get into those accounts, these folks, if you think that they have 8-foot concrete walls and 2 feet of electrified barbed wire and a moat around their office, and that's all there to keep you out, I would say one thing. First of all, you're pretty egotistical to think that they'll build all that to keep you out, right? That's number one. But number two is, more importantly, is that nothing could be further from the truth, right? These people want to talk to people like you. They have an obligation to talk to people like you, because you have solutions to help them run their business better, faster, cheaper, more effectively. The challenge isn't how do I scale the wall or get across the barbed wire. The challenge is how do we get them to choose them as one of those, choose you as one of the two or three people they really only have time to talk to versus all the other folks. So figure out a way to get your message and include them in the decision-making process to want to speak to you.
And all I'm going to say is that, you know, don't forget about the importance of external marketing, but also there's internal marketing that will quintuple your sales force, if you will. And do not lose sight of ethnic markets. Again, it's a massively important and rich revenue source that, if approached in the right way, can be quite effective for your company.
Good thoughts. If you're out there listening, take the advice of these guys and don't let your sales and don't let your marketing fall into some of these traditional pitfalls. Be aware of the ever-changing dynamic marketplace. Seek some assistance. You don't have to do this thing by yourself. Get someone who knows the land and is out there every day in those trenches to help you guide the way through and lead success for your company. I'm your host, Andy Lowe. This has been another episode of Renegade Radio, brought to you by Renegade Concepts. And remember, opportunity lies in the impossible, but you have to be willing to break the rules of conventional thinking. Until next time.